Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Jeff Sullivan can be found on Twitter at @Based_ball. The senior editor at Fangraphs joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. And as I mentioned, a professional noticer of things has noticed that something weird is happening yet again. And it might just be that this slippery baseball, for whatever reason, isn't quite as slippery, Jeff.
Yeah. The home runs are not all the way back. Now you can talk about it. The home runs they're still up, but the spike that we all saw in 2017 that was just continuing what we saw in 2016 and 2015, it's gone back down. It's mysterious, isn't it?
Yeah. You're asking me, is that rhetorical when you say mysterious, or do you think there's been an adjustment here, or is this all, like you say, if the range is Jose Altuve to Aaron Judge being an acceptable range of Major League Baseball players, does the league want us trending back toward Altuve baseballs?
I mean, Altuve, he was a very good, and he was a power hitter in 2016. So even if home run levels are just going back 2 years, nothing is really dramatically different. And we're still, what, two months and change, 2.5 months into the season. But what is interesting is that even when you adjust for temperatures, which have been down a little bit this year, the home run rate has gone down relative to last season. It is back around where we were in 2016. And you have, you've surely talked about the baseball commission that was put together to study this scientifically, that baseball arranged, and all of the scientists and analysts got together, and they determined that the baseball was experiencing lesser drag in the air. So drag slows baseball down, makes it fly less distance. So they couldn't figure out the reason why there was reduced drag on the baseball in the past few seasons. And the only explanation that anyone can come up with so far is that some of that drag is back. And I mean, this could be for any number of very, very subtle reasons, just something on the surface of the baseball. I don't know how to explain it. So far, it's just a thing that might be happening. We need more information, but it is interesting. It hints that maybe there is a little more consistency now in the way that the baseball is being stitched and designed and smoothed and mud rubbed and all those things, but we need more information anyway.
So if we've got enough information or enough of a sample size, Jeff, to say, yeah, there's more drag on the baseball and we're seeing fly balls not turned into home runs at a rate that's noticeable, that's meaningful, do we have enough sample size at this point, or do we need more to necessarily say that a different baseball has now adversely affected erstwhile power hitters, that those who, I don't know, maybe like Chris Bryan, who hasn't popped the ball out of the yard like he has in the first couple of years of his career, are we at a point where this affects particular players, or do we not have enough batted balls yet?
I think first of all, we don't have enough. Second of all, in a lot of cases, it would be subtle. I mean, you're looking at, like, you still have little guys hitting the ball out. Cesar Hernandez, I think, is on a career high of home runs. Miguel Rojas down in Miami, not that anyone's noticed, but he's hit, I think, 7 or 8 home runs after having 4 his entire career coming into the season. So there are still people who are making changes to their swings. There are still people who are hitting the ball out. I would guess that you would have to have a pretty dead baseball before you'd start worrying about someone like Chris Bryant being affected by it. I'm sure that whatever power slump he might be on would be related to something else, because even from the beginning of the home run spike, I think that there is a disproportionate benefit to sort of the middling power guys, you know, the guys who would really benefit mm-hmm. from an extra 5 or 10 feet on the fly ball. That's not Rizzo. That's not Bryan. That's not Aaron Judge. That's not Giancarlo Stanton. That's the smaller, generally the middle infielders. And so I think that if we were to see the home runs go significantly in the opposite direction, then those are the players who would be most affected. But I don't think we're quite there yet. This is still a pretty subtle effect.
Still some disagreement about what the prognosis is for Shohei Ohtani with the grade 2 tear of the ulnar collateral ligament in his throwing elbow, and the Angels are denying the report that Tommy John surgery has been decided upon and is imminent and would put him out for 1.5 years. They're saying no, not yet, even though our experience tells us that you can deny all you want. It eventually ends there, whether they like it or not. Now, I read a piece by Will Carroll that he wrote on the Modus Global site about injury risk and about some of the science behind it between rest and stress, etc. and what we know about the difference between the Japanese league throwing schedules, workloads, and travel, and what happens here. Is American baseball, is Major League Baseball in any way to be blamed for this injury?
I don't think so. Jeff Passan wrote an article about Shohei Ohtani last Friday, and the article, I think, kicked off with an anecdote that a few years ago, 2014, Passan was visiting with a doctor in Japan, a few hours north of Tokyo, who that very morning had examined 20 different young Japanese pitchers, and he found injuries in their elbows or shoulders, I think, in 19 of them, and the one exception was Shohei Ohtani. I think that the rigor with which they practice year-round and just throw all the time in Japan, I think that you are looking at, if anything, an enhanced risk. Now, you could argue that maybe if the pitchers aren't throwing as hard, then there's less damage, because at the end of the day, there is a correlation between how hard you're releasing the ball and how much torque you're putting on your elbow. And Ohtani, of course, is sort of, he's at the peak of his throwing background. He threw a lot in Japan, and he's around the peak in terms of how hard he's throwing. So I think whenever you have one pitcher getting hurt, you can try to come up with theories as to why, but at the end of the day, there are so many pitchers getting hurt. I mean, look at the Angels bullpen. They've lost three relievers this year to Tommy John surgery alone. Whose fault is that? And it's just the fault of pitching. Pitching is a terrible thing to do if you are throwing really hard. You can make your money, but you're probably going to end up with a bunch of scars on your arm.
Yeah, I've always said all pitchers are already broken. We just don't yet know how. You tweeted out much more succinctly and much more funny. The thing about pitching is don't do it. I tend to agree with that. It's entirely dangerous. And yet, I'm not altogether convinced that we won't see teams maybe in smaller markets, maybe who are trying to find the next competitive advantage and without spending money. I won't be surprised at all if down the line we see teams that are open to two-way players like this. Maybe it's not starting. Maybe it's more relieving. And I just wonder what you think about trying to develop those players and whether that's possible, since you're taking guys who pitched at a high school level, potentially, you know, like a Rodon who threw 128 something pitches in one start, and 95 of them were 90 plus sliders. I wonder if that's possible given the way you've got to get to the minor leagues to begin with.
Yeah, I think that Ohtani is not necessarily the first to try to be a two-way player. He's certainly the most high-profile, but the Rays drafted Brendan McKay pretty high in the draft last season, and he's been a success in the low minors, both hitting and pitching. He's been very good. There were a few players, I'm not a draft expert, but I know that there were a few players selected this year who were announced at a couple different positions. I don't think we're about to see any sort of sweeping change to the profile of the game, and this would sort of be undone as well if they ever expanded rosters, because if you went to 26 or 27 players, then suddenly you don't need that flexibility or versatility anymore. But, I mean, if anything, you look at the game today, teams have like 8 or 9-man bullpens. It's absurd considering where we were even 10, 15 years ago. And so when you have really short benches, it behooves you to have people who can pitch and hit. Those are obviously very difficult to develop. I don't know if it's easier to do it with a guy who pitches and starts or a guy who relieves and hits. I don't know. I feel like you would kind of need the guy to be a starter so that you can have him on a consistent routine. But I don't know. But I can say that teams do seem to be increasingly open-minded to this, even if the numbers of these potential two-way players are still very, very small.
Lucas Giolito has been the subject of some conversations in this segment in the past. And then, you know, last night we saw it once again. I always hear the way some old school scouts defined the difference between command and control. They say control is getting the ball into the strike zone. Command is hitting your spots within the strike zone. It's all semantics, really. But it looks like Giolito has a genuine control problem and not a command problem. Like, it's not, he's not missing by little bits. And this might even dovetail with a Tyler Chatwood conversation, because he's on the mound tonight as well. But when you're talking about a young player, where and how do you fix that?
Well, Giolito has been among the bigger disappointments to me this season. I know there are a lot of young White Sox players, and he's not the only one. Many of their starting pitchers have struggled, and I'm surprised we're not just having a positive Dylan Covey conversation, as long as you want to find some upside here. But I was looking at Giolito every single time that I sort the list in terms of just raw strike rate. This isn't analytics. This is just how often do you throw strikes, and it's always Giolito and Tyler Chatwood just alternating spots at the bottom of the list. League average, you're supposed to throw at least 60% of your pitches for strikes. That's like bare minimum, I think, if you want to survive as a starting pitcher. And then you need to miss some bats. Giolito is not missing bats. He's missing spots. And this is so far beyond just being a command problem for him. Like you said, it is a control problem. And if anything, I think that when you have the emergence of someone like Dylan Covey, who I don't think anyone was counting on, given how he looked before, when you have Covey come up and Rodon come up, he's back from the DL. This seems like you should consider at least giving Giolito the big longer term minor league overhaul, because I don't think he's fixed anything. He hasn't solved anything. His release point has been all over the place. It's coming back up. You remember when he started the season, he had dropped his arm angle. Like, he was going to see if that was going to work for him. Pitched well against the Cubs in spring training. Didn't sustain. He hasn't put anything together. Even when he's limited the runs allowed this year, he hasn't really gotten any strikeouts. There's just not a whole lot here that's encouraging. So I'd feel like Giolito needs a good amount of time out of the spotlight to try to rebuild this.
Well, Jeff, let's have the positive Dylan Covey conversation. Every conversation I've had with Dylan has been a positive one. What is different? He's a Rule 5 guy that has picked up some velocity, but beyond that, it looks like it could be real.
Yeah, I was just looking at him before coming on, just thinking, like, there's a reasonable chance we could be talking about Dylan Covey here. And obviously, last season, it was not very good. You don't expect a very good season from many Rule 5 guys, especially when they're in the starting rotation. And I haven't looked at Covey mechanically yet, but he's got a little bit of a higher arm angle. But it seems like he's just developed a lot of faith in his sinker, and he's able to pepper the zone with his sinker. He, like you said, he's throwing a little harder than he did last season, which is a good thing, considering even last season he threw a little bit out of the bullpen as well, which you'd think his velocity would have played up. But he's moved away from the four-seam fastball, which is fine. His four-seam fastball is not a special pitch. And so he's just kind of attacking sinker first, and it's worked for him. And you should, for anyone out there, you should not sleep on the fact that last season, Dylan Covey struck out 13% of the batters he faced. That's not very high. He's at 23% this season. That's one of the biggest increases you will ever see year to year. Now, I know he's only made, what, like five starts or something so far this season?
Well, his velocity is up on every one of his pitches.
Yeah. This could just be he might have had a better offseason. You've talked to him. I haven't dug in deep on him yet. I was just looking at looking at Zach Eflin, who's a guy for the Phillies, who had very low strikeout rates his first couple seasons, and then this year his strikeout rate has almost doubled. He's doing sort of the Dylan Covey thing. Now he's pitched a little more than Covey has this season, but when you have a strikeout rate increase of 10 percentage points, that's meaningful, and you don't need a whole lot more information to know that this guy is better. So I don't know, coming into the season, we never talked about Dylan Covey, I don't think. I think this is the first time his name has come up on one of these segments, but he's right there. He's in the conversation now. He's in a way, he might be the best or the second best White Sox starting pitcher at the moment.
Do you believe in the last couple weeks of Jason Hayward as any kind of indication that he's not bad at hitting anymore? Or is this variance and the function of a 374 BABIP?
I like it. Do you believe that Jason Hayward is not bad? So there were signs even in April that Hayward was making pretty good contact. You probably had discussed this. His numbers didn't reflect it, but he was hitting the ball pretty hard, and he was hitting a lot of atom balls. Now, sometimes that's offered as an excuse, but when you look at Hayward, even his down seasons, and let's face it, there were two long down seasons, he made contacts and he drew walks. He wasn't hitting the ball with authority, but this season, you look around, he hasn't gotten dramatically better in any one category, but he's striking out even less. And by any measure, his hard hit rate, whether you want to look at StatCast or some other information source, his hard hit rate is up. And I mean, you never want to make too much of one single plate appearance outcome, but for Jason Hayward, the lefty, to get a well-struck hit against Josh Hader yesterday, that's that's meaningful. That's not something you would have expected from Jason Hayward necessarily in the past. So I don't think that the Cubs should be looking at Jason Hayward thinking, well, here's our lineup savior. Here's a guy who's going to carry the team. But he had, it was stunning to see the depths to which Jason Hayward fell. And he's still so young, he's still so talented. It's really not hard for me at all to buy him as at least a league average hitter, throwing his defense. And you have a player who, even if he's not necessarily worth his contract, can be a good regular for this team.
So, Jeff, a meta question. Take us behind the curtain a little bit. What trips your trigger from a national perspective on a guy like Hayward or a guy like a guy with a track record? When do you start looking? Because you mentioned Bryant's struggles and, you know, back of the baseball card, long term, he'll probably be okay. We talked about Yu Darvish before his triceps injury and your confidence in his bouncing back to what he'd been before. When do you start to look at a guy? What kind of sample sizes do you need to think this is meaningful and now something has changed, whether it be positive or negative?
Yeah, I think with pitchers, for me at least, it's easier to spot something being off or something being on sooner, because I think that pitchers can change quicker, whether that's because of, on the plus side, they learned or adjusted a new pitch, or on the downside, they're hurt or something has changed with their mechanics. I think that the pitchers can be night and day from almost start to start. But with hitters, I think that it really is sort of a matter of track record. Of course, you look for the things that might change quickest. You can look at, for example, Matt Davidson. I know he's not hitting the lights out of the ball right now, but he seems to be a lot more disciplined than he was just last season. You can look for a change in contact rate. You can look for a change in how often a guy's just hitting the ball in the air. But if you have someone, if you have an established hitter and his strikeouts are going up, or his ground ball rate is going up, you look at, I mean, this is beyond saving now, but Chris Davis on the Orioles, like, there's clearly something is awry with Chris Davis, or Cole Calhoun with the Angels. These are guys who have track records, but their numbers are so unfamiliar relative to where they used to be that there clearly has to be something wrong here that might even just go beyond an issue on the baseball field. But when you, to a certain extent, it's a feel thing. I mean, if you say the name Chris Bryant, I'm just going to assume he's good now, and he's going to be very good for at least the next 10 years. I can't remember the last time I ever worried about a Joey Votto slump. People slump. Mike Trout went hitless for a few games in a row back in April. That didn't keep up. But otherwise, you're looking for a dramatic change in some sort of meaningful statistical indicator. And if nothing's there, then by and large, the hitter's going to be himself.
Anything you want to preview that we're going to be seeing at Fangraphs.com today or in the coming days?
Well, I've been thinking about the idea of doing a deeper dive on Jason Hayward, whether that's going to be today or later on, I don't know, but I know Hayward is always a popular topic, and I think people haven't been able to write very much encouraging things about Jason Hayward in a while, and you know, he used to be a Fangraphs favorite, so it might be time to shed the light on and see what's going well for Jason Hayward.
There we go. That's why we have him on. He is Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Until next week.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.